Today's reading is taken from the Gospel according to St. Matthew, chapter 5, verses 14 to 30, and it can be found on page 994 in the Pew Bibles. Page 994, Matthew 25, verses 14 to 30. Again, it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his property to them. To one, he gave 5 talents of money, to another, 2 talents, and to another, 1 talent, each according to his ability. Then he went on his journey. The man who had received the 5 talents went at once and put his money to work and gained 5 more. So also, the one with the 2 talents gained 2 more. But the man who had received the 1 talent went off, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them. The man who had received the 5 talents brought the other 5. "Master," he said, "you entrusted me with 5 talents. See, I have gained 5 more. His master replied, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness." The man with the 2 talents also came. "Master," he said, "you entrusted me with 2 talents. See, I have gained 2 more. His master replied, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness." Then the man who had received the 1 talent came. "Master," he said, "I knew that you are a hard man, harvesting where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. So I was afraid and went out and hid your talent in the ground. See, here is what belongs to you." His master replied, "You wicked, lazy servant. So you knew that I harvest where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed? Well then, you should have put my money on deposit with the bankers so that when I returned, I would have received it back with interest. Take the talent from him and give it to the one who has the 10 talents. For everyone who has will be given more, and he will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken from him. And throw that worthless servant outside into the darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." Amen.
Before we and first hearing, it's a bit of a strange one, isn't it, that story we just heard? It's for a start, it doesn't seem very fair. One servant gets given 5, one servant gets given 2, one poor wee soul gets given just the 1. Doesn't seem very fair. And then it seems a bit harsh. 2 of them get praised for taking risks. One of them gets condemned for playing it safe. A bit of a strange tale. Here's 2 things to bear in mind before we have a look at it, okay? 2 things to bear in mind. First thing is that Jesus is telling a parable. And parables are designed to shock us. They've always got a twist in them. They're designed to make us sort of sit up and say, "Whoa, what's going on? I wasn't expecting that." And that's deliberate, because Jesus wants us to go away and think about them and puzzle about them. And think, what on earth did he mean by that? And to talk about them. Maybe that's something you've been doing over lunch today. What did he mean by that? That's what a parable's for. Okay, that's the first thing to bear in mind. The second thing to bear in mind is he says, if you look at back at the beginning of the chapter, you see these are 3 parables he told about the kingdom of heaven. Now, by the kingdom of heaven, he doesn't mean heaven. He means the kingdom that has been made possible by his being here with us. It's a heavenly kingdom, if you like. It's not heaven, but it's a heavenly kingdom. It's what's possible when Jesus is around. So you need to bear these two things in mind as we look at it. So what can we learn from this parable about what it means to be successful? Well, I'm going to focus on four things, okay? Here they are. First of all, what does Jesus mean by the word talent? It's important to think about that. And then we're going to think about how does he actually measure success? Because that's interesting, and it's not what you'd expect. And then we're going to look at the things that can get in our way, get in the way of us being successful in life, because they're in the parable as well. And then finally, what I believe is the real secret of success. Okay, so that's what we're going to be doing. The first one, what does Jesus mean by the word talent? By talent, Jesus is not meaning what we would think of as a talent. You know, we think having a good voice or being able to play football, that's a talent. But that's not what Jesus is talking about here. A talent is actually a unit of measurement of weight that was used in Jesus' day. You got a talent of wheat or a talent of flour or a talent of whatever. But in particular, by Jesus' day, it becomes synonymous with a talent of silver. Okay? So it was a sum of money. That's what he means by talent. And if you got your Bibles open and look at the footnotes, you'll see that that sum of money was several hundred pounds worth. So it's quite a lot. Quite a lot. Okay. So in the story, the talent that Jesus is talking about is actually an investment. The master invests some money in his servants. So it's think investment. Think something that's been invested in us by God, or something that's been entrusted into our keeping by God. That's what this story's about. That's what Jesus means by talent. If something's entrusted into your keeping, it's given in trust. And it's given for a reason, not just for us to use as we please. Okay, so that's the first question. That's what Jesus means by talent. How is success measured? And this is interesting, because it's not what you'd expect. Because according to Jesus in the story, to be successful is not necessarily to achieve much at all. Rather, to be successful in God's eyes is to be faithful. That's what he says. That's what the story says. He says it twice. To the first servant, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful in a few things, you'll now be faithful in many. And he says it to the second servant, well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful with a few things, I'll put you in charge of many. In other words, God is not so much interested in the greatness of our achievements in life. He's far more interested in our faithfulness. To be successful is to be faithful. To be successful is to live up to the faith that God has placed in you, that God has invested in you. To be successful, if you think back to the drawing pin joke, because there's a connection, to be successful is not to let God down. What we have been given, whether it's skills, whether it's experience, whether it's opportunities in life, is a measure of the faith God has in us. And how we use those skills or experiences or opportunities is a measure of our faithfulness in response. It's all about faithfulness. The whole story is about faithfulness. And that's important because in the eyes of the world, success is measured in terms of what we achieve. It's all about us, isn't it? But in the eyes of God, it's much more to do with trust, to do with partnership, to do with relationship. Success is measured in terms of what we are willing to do for him with all that he has given us, all the skills and experience and opportunity. What are we willing to do for him with the things we've been given? That is how he measures success. The third thing we can learn from today's story is actually the scariest thing. And it's that our abilities and opportunities may be God-given, but he is going to hold us to account for how we use them. There's no getting away from the end of that story. He really will hold us to account for how we have used all that we've been given. The third servant in the story brings into focus what in God's eyes are the three enemies of success. Okay? Remember I said the things that get in the way. The first is laziness. The servant ended up doing nothing with what he'd been given. It's been said, you know, the only place success comes before work is in the dictionary. Whatever God has given us, whatever abilities, whatever opportunities, he expects us to be using them. So that's the first enemy. The second enemy of success in God's eyes is jealousy. I'm sure part of the reason why the third servant didn't do anything with his talent was because he saw how much the other two had been given. And he thought, oh, that's not fair. Rather than focusing on what he had, he focused on what he hadn't or what he had not. And as a result, he wasted the opportunity to use it. So the second enemy is jealousy. It's focusing on what we've not got rather than focusing on what we have. You know, I know someone who, by the world's standards, didn't have all that much in life. She didn't have all that much to offer. Her name was May. Many of you will have known her. May worked away at a number of things in her life. But what she loved doing most was just looking after children. And when she and her husband were offered the chance of running a children's home down in New Haven, I think Ray knows who I'm talking about here. When they were given the chance of running that children's home, she jumped at it. And it was a children's home. It was for the children from broken homes, from the waifs and strays in life. And you'll know that when you've got that sort of a sugarly background, when you've got that sort of uncertainty in life, all you need, most of all, is just to feel loved and to know there's someone you can trust. And that's what May gave in abundance. And I took her funeral service a few years ago, and there were dozens and dozens and dozens of people there of all ages. And they all called her mum. You see, she, in the world's eyes, maybe didn't have all that much to give, but in God's eyes, she had plenty to give, and she used it. God's not bothered by what we can't do in life. He's more bothered by what we can with the skills and the opportunities and the gifts that he's given us. Second enemy is jealousy. The third enemy of success, and this comes out most clearly, I think, in the story of the talents, is fear. Fear. That third servant is scared, stupid. He's scared of failing. How many of us know that fear? I know that fear. I'm sure I'm not alone here. It's something that we all struggle with or still are struggling with, the fear of failure. And so we come to the real secret of success. You know, here's an eternal truth that has taken me years to learn, and I'm still learning it, and it's this. You cannot be truly successful in life unless your life is God-centered. God-centered. That's the real secret of success. Does anybody here do pottery? Any potters here? Hands up if you'd love to be a potter but have never got around to it yet. Okay, here's a hint. Here's a hint. If you want to make a nice pot, you get this big dot of clay and you slap it on the wheel, it's got to be centered. If the pot is not centered on the wheel, it doesn't matter how good you are at crafting it, it'll go all over the place. And it's the same when it comes to our life. Our lives, unless they are centered on God, they go all over the place. There's a fellow called Walter Wright who wrote of the three big questions that we all struggle with in life. And how we measure success tends to be a reflection of how we deal with those three questions. And those three questions are, who am I? Why am I here? And will I survive? Who am I? Why am I here? And will I survive? I'm not going to ask you to put your hands up if you've ever thought those questions. I think we all do. Who am I reflects our need of an identity. We want to know who we are. Why am I here reflects our need of purpose. What's it all for? And will I survive reflects our need of security. And a successful life is one that manages to deal with all three. And you know, as Christians, we believe that this is the God-centered life that is offered us by Jesus. Listen to these words. They were written by Jesus' brother Jude. And they're written to fellow followers of Jesus. To those who have been called, who are loved by God the Father, and kept by Jesus Christ. Just that opening sentence of a letter. To those who have been called, who are loved by God the Father, and kept by Jesus Christ, sums up to me what it means to have a God-centered life. Why am I here? I'm here because I'm called by God. God has invested in my life. He's invested in my abilities. He's invested in my opportunities. They're all given to me by Him for a reason. He expects me to use them. And by using them, I am fulfilling His calling. Will I survive? It's interesting, the examples that Andy chose from the Bible, David and Gideon, you wouldn't think they'd got much chance of survival, would you? We all face struggles in life. We will always face struggles in life. But we will not face them alone because we are kept by Jesus Christ. We are called by God, kept by Jesus Christ. Whatever we face, we're able to rely on His wisdom and His strength. And who am I? Who am I? I'm someone who is loved by God the Father. And that's what matters most. You know, knowing that you're loved by God the Father will give you the strength to lead a successful life. There's a famous Olympic diver called Greg Louganis. Okay? Now, I'm scared of heights. I just can't cope with diving. Okay, at the best of times. And so I can imagine it's quite a stressful thing, let alone competing in championships. And, you know, we saw the Olympics. You know, it all hangs on such a slim, there's such a slim margin between success and failure. I mean, Tom Daley, we thought he was fantastic. Well, he came third. You know, I mean, there's so much at stake. And this fellow, Greg Louganis, was asked once how he coped with the stress of it. There he is up on the diving board. How does he cope with the stress? You know, all those months and years of preparation, and it's all over in half a second. How does he cope? And this is what he said. He says, when I'm up on the platform, I just remind myself that whatever happens, my mum still loves me. And then he says, I just go for it.